Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre. And this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions. And we have a woman who's written a book about a guy we've spoken to a lot of times, spoken about a lot of times on the show. And that is, and the book is called Paul Lynn, A Biography. His life, his love, and his laughter.
And we have Kathy Fitzgibbon Rudolph.
Yes.
I like that name.
Well, thank
you. Bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. Fitzgibbon.
My fellow Long Islander.
That's right.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Well, you listen to the show, Kathy. You know that Paul Lynn has been, I mean,
there's a highlight of your show.
He's one of them. I mean, there are certain people whose names come up on this show constantly.
Yeah, along with Cesar Romero.
and Paul Lynn. And Gilbert has a classic story that he likes to tell about Paul. But your fascination with him goes all the way back to childhood.
Yes, and 17 years old.
Very sweet book.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us how at what age you became such a devoted Paul fan.
At 15, I saw Paul Lynn on the Hollywood Squares. I'd seen him on Bewitched, but with the unique personality, the campiness, the whole bit, I just thought he
was... Uncle Arthur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought he was very handsome, very quick-witted, never seen anybody in the world like him. So I thought he was handsome, and I said, I'd like to meet him one day, like any teenage wants to meet their idol. At 17 years old, having done research about 2 years on Paul Lynn, I was in my... hometown of Levittown, Long Island, and I went through a book about Broadway stars. And in the book, and this is after a lot of research, in the book, it said Paul Lynn's business manager's phone number. So I went home, I said to my mom and dad, can I call California? You know, I live in New York. And they said, make it person to person, he's never going to answer. I dialed the number, Paul Lynn himself answers the phone, believe a fan finds the phone number.
In those days, they were so irresponsible to just publish a number in a book in a library.
There were a bunch of, Stan Laurel had his name in the book.
There were people who were listed for whatever reason.
Yeah, there were a bunch of people.
That's how Chuck McCann found Stan Laurel.
Yes.
Just found him in the phone book.
There you go.
Yeah. So you did the same.
So I did the same. But Paul, and he was shocked. He couldn't believe somebody found his phone number. He says, I'm unlisted. How did you get it? But I kept talking to him about his career. He didn't hang up, shockingly. And then in the middle of me talking about Donny and Marie Osmond and all the shows he was on, I said, will you go to the senior prom with me?
I love this. Most teenage girls at that point are crushing on the Bay City Rollers.
Oh, gosh.
Or John Schneider.
Yes, on Paul Lynn.
On Paul Lynn.
Donny Osmond. I took down the posters. Paul Lynn replaced them all.
You are unique.
And Paul said, I can't go with you. No way. And I said, no way. And he went in his voice, you know, no way. And then he left. And then I talked to him about his dog. And then I went into, I know you come to New York. I want to meet you. He said, I can't meet you. I don't even know you. Long story short, after
begging, pleading,
I said, Thanksgiving's coming. I know you visit New York in Thanksgiving. He says, I'm coming. I said, meet me. 5 minutes in a picture. After a few no's, I said, I'll have my father take me. Then he said, you got it. 5 minutes in New York City. I'll call you when I get to the Pier Hotel. That's where he was staying. 2 weeks later, Paul calls. I had given him my number, and he said, I'm going to be at the Pier, 3:30. Meet me there with your father.
How about that?
Okay, so the day comes. I go into the city. I'm a wreck. I'm really excited. I got 5 minutes with him, and that's a dream for me to come true. And I bet my high school teachers that I would meet him before I graduated. Who would know this would happen, right? So I told him we had to watch Hollywood Squares if I did that during class.
You had a bet with your high school teachers that you would meet Paul Lynn.
Before I graduated high school. It's unbelievable. So I go into Manhattan. We go to the Hotel Pierre, my dad and I. And as we get to the Hotel Pierre, it's on fire. No one can come up. No one can come down. I said, I got to meet him. My father goes, let's get out of here. The flames, the firemen are running through. And I said, I don't care if it burns down. I have to meet him. 2 minutes later, Paul came through the revolving doors. He was running a little late, thank goodness, because it worked out for me. And we tried to go into the room to have a drink, and they told Paul, you don't have your tie on. Paul says, how do I get my tie when the rooms are on fire and I can't go upstairs? He was really annoyed. He gets like, So he said, let's go down to the Sherry Netherlands. He said, I promised you 5 minutes. Well, the conversation went on for 2.5 hours.
Wow.
We just clicked.
Even though you found him shy.
He very quiet. Yeah. I would ask him questions. He answered, always honest. I knew another side of him that a lot of Hollywood, you know, mm-hmm. if you worked with him, could be different. But for me, very genuine, very caring, a lot of fun. But at the end of 2.5 hours of talking, and my dad always says, you guys were like old friends. You just clicked.
That's nice. That's sweet.
It was great.
And he trusted you enough to tell you right off the bat that the questions at Hollywood Square as the jokes were written for him.
That was what I was going to, yep. Yeah. I said very innocently, Paul, Mr. Lind, I called him, you know.
You know what stands out with that, with this? It's odd. It doesn't even have to do so much with Paul Lind. But I remember my childhood and part of my adulthood, the idea of a long distance call.
Yeah.
Used to be that. Remember when
it was a big deal?
Yeah.
It was so expensive. It was a lot of money.
Yeah. You wouldn't call if it was the Queen of England was wanted to. You wouldn't call long distance.
But it's very sweet that he not only stayed on the phone with you, he didn't hang up right away. He didn't have some kind of star trip. He obviously knows this is a teenage girl who likes me, likes my work, and then gives you a private audience.
Yeah.
It was great. There have been a lot of aspersions cast about Paul over the years, and even some by the celebrities in your book. But here he is meeting a fan, and he couldn't be more genuine.
Oh, more genuine. And I said to him, you know, the jokes in Hollywood Squares, I love them. Do you, you know, write them? And he said, no, dear, I don't. Someone writes them for me.
Gave credit
as simple
where it was due.
As that.
And when did you find out you weren't going to be his wife or girlfriend?
There's a story with that.
Yeah.
But
tell that one.
All right, I'll tell that one. But real quick, at the end of me and Paul meeting, he said, you have my phone number. Here's my home address. Come see me. That's how we ended in the city. And as life went on and I got to be with Paul a little bit more, he'd visit the island. I did go out to his house. I wasn't quite sure if he was gay. I really was naive.
How old were you at this point?
At this time, probably 19.
All right, okay? So you're starting to figure that out for yourself.
That's not naive. That's brain damage.
Yes, it was. At 14, I was like, gone with
it. That's like not knowing Rip Taylor.
Well, she was, you know, a little bit of provincial small town girl.
It was also denial.
Right?
It was also denial.
It was also denial.
You know, he was very affectionate towards me, and I thought it was nice. So we go out one night. It was my birthday. I met Paul in Virginia with my girlfriend. He had done a show, and afterwards it was my birthday. We were going to go out dancing. So I kind of had a hint when we walked into this disco, and it was mostly men. Like, I was getting a hint there.
Geez.
And now we're sitting around, and the whole night was great. Had fun. I was with Elizabeth Allen. She was lovely.
Yeah, she worked a lot with him.
Oh, yeah. We had a great
Paul
time.
Lynch
laughing
show.
All night. Paul was always joking with me. He used to bring me in, like, I was the star when we'd walk into the place.
How sweet.
And then a guy jumps on Paul. I love you. I love you. And I'm standing there. I love him more. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the guy's grabbing Paul, and then he's begging him with his legs, and Paul's trying to walk. This guy's being dragged. I mean, they really loved him. And then Paul and I were dancing. Men were trying to cut in. I didn't know if they were trying to cut in for me or for Paul. I couldn't figure this out. And then Paul and I were dancing to a slow dance. It's the end of the night. I'm going to go fast forward to, you know, when they flick the lights, it's the last moment. And all night long, we sat at a table. We had the best bartender. You know, they treated him like a king. He could have blinked and the drinks were there. And then we were dancing slowly. And it's the last dance and it's very romantic. And I'm thinking, wow, I know Paul goes out. He keeps going out all night. I wonder where we're going to go next. And then the lights flickered and Paul came over and says, good night, Kathy. My mouth dropped. And then he walked out with our waiter.
There you go. Geez. That was a crushing blow. There you go. You know, I learned a lot about his childhood from the book, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew that he'd always battled weight issues his whole life. He had a strange relationship with food.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly a strange relationship with drink. We had Charlotte Ray on this podcast, too.
Wow.
And they went to Northwestern together.
Yes, they did.
And Cloris Leachman was there as well.
Yeah.
They were sort of a fun trio. But I found it interesting, too, the way he gravitated to comedy. Because he was doing Shakespeare, he was doing Cyrano at Northwestern. But every time he opened his mouth,
everybody would crack up. The teacher would be rolling down the floor. He just couldn't do it straight.
Because
you know?
He was so broad.
Yeah.
You know?
And his twang and his accent. And he was also very heavy.
So
he's trying to do, you know, a romantic Cyrano scene. It isn't working. And he played up to it.
It became apparent that comedy was his.
The question in show business, who came first, Paul Lynn or Alice Ghost?
Well,
should
they were
tell
so
you
alike.
The truth?
Oh.
Do you all want to know?
Yes, sure. Yes.
Okay. 1952, new faces.
Paulin
and Alice meet. She goes on with her voice and her jokes. So I listened to her first. Paul came on second. This is in 52. You can see it on YouTube. It's New Faces in 52.
Yeah, with Robert Clary.
That's right. And I interviewed him as well. Yes. But there they were. I looked and I said, Alice has a little bit more of a nasally, you know, drawn out voice at that time. I listened to Paul. He did the trip to Africa.
Yes, that was his famous bit.
Little different voice. As time went on, I think they all steal from each other. Charles Nelson Reilly, they all do it to each other. So, you know, Paul, forgive me, but I think Alice might have been first a little bit.
Interesting.
Aha.
Because I studied it. I wanted to know.
He never thought she was kind of swiping his shtick.
They were the best of friends. Best of friends. She held the little...
Because she talked like that, too.
Yeah, she did.
They were the same person.
Like sister and brother.
Yeah. And both turned up on Bewitched.
That's right.
Right.
Well, they were very good friends till the end.
Somebody on Bewitched. So he struggled in New York. I mean, after college, he came to New York. He gave himself, what, 5 years to become rich and famous?
Yeah.
But
wasn't happening.
But he struggled mightily.
Oh, yeah.
When he got to New York.
He had to sell his blood.
Yeah.
He lived in a building with Marlon Brando and Wally Cox. Do you guys know that?
Oh, yes,
he lived in that building.
Yes,
and he stole their food at night.
Exactly.
He raided their fridges.
Oh, wow.
And then one night, they stuck a note in there. Paul, pick anything you want. It's poisoned.
They put a note in the fridge. One of these is poison.
Oh.
Because he kept stealing. Because he had a weight problem and he kept stealing.
He also had no money.
The food of the other actors. But
and what was going on between Brando and Wally Cox?
They were very good friends.
It's another book.
I don't know. That's another story. I wish I had asked Paul. But
that's a whole other book.
That's something I think about a lot.
Somebody wrote about it. It's a very interesting story. I did read it.
He started getting TV work.
Yes.
Eventually, he does a Bilko. He does Red Button Show.
Yep.
He does Martha Ray Show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's starting to get a little work. But he winds up...
Sporadic, yeah.
It's very sporadic. And New Faces of 1952 isn't the huge break.
No, not at all.
That it was supposed to be. But Bye Bye Birdie...
That was it.
Was a big break.
Paul, right before he was doing Bye Bye Birdie, I don't know if you guys know this, but he was very suicidal at that point. He was going to that was it. He said, I don't know if he would have went through with it, but he said, I'm very depressed, the whole bit. And he went to a therapist, and she said, you just need to work. That's all you need is to work. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, he gets a phone call from Gower Champion.
Yeah.
Who says, I have a spot for you. Well, Paul's ecstatic. This is supposed to be a big play. He goes there. It's 9 lines. He wants to, he has a fit. He throws a hissy fit in the place.
He stormed out because it was only 9 lines.
Oh, jeez.
And Gower Champion said, Paul, I promise we'll make it grow. I promise this will work for you. And in the end, as you all know, that the Broadway play is what gave him the first real showbiz celebrity status in his life. That was the first time
that and
he
Uncle
felt like
and
a star.
Bewitched were like the two big breakthroughs.
Yeah.
Kids, what gonna do with these kids today? Kids, talk and talk. And why can't they be like we were? Perfect in every way. What is wrong with these kids today?
Very good. Very good.
Gilbert Lynn. You're bringing back good memories. Love it.
Dick Gaudier was in that.
Yes.
Cheetah Rivera, Dick Van Dyke, who we had on this
so
podcast.
So was Dick Gaudier
He was Conrad Birdie.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. But and he's some squabbles with cast members.
Oh, yeah.
And just a little bit of diva behavior. Maybe a lot.
Cheetah Rivera said he was great, brought the house down. But besides the scenes, he was giving her husband at the time, Tony, a very hard time. Because if the timing went off, they did something in the play. But when the music goes off, everybody's timing is different. But they didn't tell Tony. And it got onto Paul's line. And Paul had a hissy fit on that. Cheetah and him ended up, because I spoke to her too. And she ended up saying they ended up being friends. Dick Gaudier, he was very... maybe jealous of him because he was getting more status.
Yeah.
And he used to tell, because Dick said to me when I spoke to him, he said, yeah, Paul used to call me a teenage twerp. He goes, I was almost 30 years old. I don't know what his thing was about me.
It's a recurring theme with him in his life. I mean, some petty jealousies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, very insecure.
Very.
And he used to hit the bottle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was a very, very big drinker.
Now I got to get to the story that...
You might as well.
I'm amazed I waited this long.
Okay, what are we doing?
And it's, this I've is a story Peter Marshall confirmed.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I've heard this about him a lot. Well, this isn't the dressing room.
Oh, okay. Oh, good, because I was going to warn Kathy.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Good.
That's
heard...
coming next.
Oh, I know.
He'll close with that.
And I worked when Whoopi Goldberg and Henry Winkler were doing Hollywood Squares.
Okay.
I was like a semi-regular on there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys producing it was a producer in the original. And he said that Paul Lynn was, among hating other people, was viciously anti-Semitic. and he would, like, during the lunch hour, everyone would be having a great time telling stories and making jokes. And Paul Lynn, bombed out of his skull, would be there going, "Oh, those fucking Jews.
Oh, here we go.
They're the reason I don't have a career.
Roll with it, Kathy.
The Jews have held me back all this time."
Now, I want to clarify. Peter Marshall did not confirm that one.
No.
Bruce Valanche did.
Bruce Valanche said a couple of drinks.
And Paul was like the Wannsee conference. Oh,
yeah,
that's what he said.
Bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. The other story.
Okay, get it out of the way.
No, here we go.
If you thought the language in the first
story. The lady's son is in the next room, but he's a teenager.
The in
he can
the
handle
first
it.
Story was bad.
Ryan, you might not want to record this part.
Maybe this time.
I'm already going off.
You might want to call a cab before I go into this one. One time.
No.
You've heard it on the show.
Oh, gosh. I know what's coming.
They led Paul Lynn. They were walking through the dressing room of the gold digger dance, supposedly.
Yeah, yeah.
And Paul Lynn said, "Ready, take a deep breath."
I apologize in advance. Paul Lynn said,
"This place smells like cunt, I think."
I'm done.
You got a big laugh out of a person who knew Paul Lynn personally. There you go. Now, can you confirm or deny?
Oh, that's probably Paul. I wasn't there. He was a gentleman with me, but that could
be
him.
He was a gentleman.
No doubt.
He was probably playing for the
laughs.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Yeah. Now, what about the anti-Semitic stuff? I've heard that a lot.
The man was anti a few things.
He was outrageous.
He was, you know, whatever was pissing him off that day. Yeah. You know, if your last name sounded like you were Jewish, you might get it. If you were Irish, you were a dumb Mick. You know, you don't know what he's going to say. Charlotte Ray was one of his closest friends, and she was, I think, part Jewish or full Jewish. I don't even know.
Well, yeah, one of the things that recurs in the book is how the friendships, you know, with Cheetah, with Kay Ballard,
they would lose
patience with him for long stretches, write him off,
yes.
And then he would always kind of worm his way back into their lives.
I think Kay had the most, she was the most interesting to talk to. She had good stories, bad stories, and Paul was this, and Paul was that, and she said he had more money than me. After a while, he just had more money than me. We'd go to his house, brand new house, he's having a housewarming party. Well, no one's allowed in because he doesn't want anybody to mess the place
up. Right, he didn't want anybody to touch anything.
And there's a story. Some say it's true. Some say it's not, the way he died.
Oh,
some say that there was some young guy he picked up, and the guy could have called the ambulance, but didn't, and just snuck off.
Here.
Yeah.
I've been at Paul's house.
Yeah.
He has an alarm. He has an alarm by his bed. The whole house is alarmed. Yeah. If somebody did sneak in, they would have had to set the alarm before they left.
Yeah.
Didn't make sense to me.
Right.
Yeah.
He was found by friends in the middle of the night when he didn't show up for, was it a New Year's Eve party?
Paul Barisi was having
Paul
a birthday
Barisi's party.
I spoke to Paul himself and I said, "Did you go to every window? Did you check every door?" He said, "Kathy, I tried everything." I believe that because he just couldn't believe Paul didn't show up for his birthday party, and he was laying in bed thinking, oh my gosh, that's not like Paul. He already told me I'm bringing a gift. Why didn't you show up? So he went out to look for him, and nobody had answered the dog. The dog was barking. Yes. Alfred, his dog at the time.
Yes.
And you know what? Paul liked to cruise on Saturday nights, for sure. Maybe he did go out, meet somebody, but it doesn't look like they were still in the house.
There was no sign of foul play of any kind. He just died of a heart attack. He had taxed his heart.
Well, his mother died at 54. His father died at 53 or 54. They all died within 3 months of each other. So it was
And he had abused his body.
And he was also overweight.
And a heavy drinker and a smoker.
Was he ever threatened with blackmail?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was threatened with blackmail. His house was robbed, and somebody actually left him a note. If you go to the police, I have blackmail on you. So Paul picked up the phone and called 911. He didn't care. He didn't care. He was, you know.
He felt Hollywood Squares, and this is interesting. I mean, there was a love-hate relationship with his success on Hollywood Squares, too, because it was making him rich. It was making him famous, but he felt trapped in a, pardon
literally
the pun.
Trapped in a box.
Trapped in a box. And he constantly worried that he was being looked down upon, not only as a TV star, because he wanted to do features.
Yes.
Not only was he being looked down as a TV guy, but even worse, a game show guy.
Yeah, he went to Northwestern for acting. He did a lot of Summer Stack, exactly. I've seen him do Plaza Suite and some, you know, live shows on. He was good. And here he was.
Sure he was. Tormented by this idea that his talent wasn't being...
Exactly. But in the 70s, as we all know, he was probably the most wanted extra guest on any show. Absolutely. I mean, I list them all in the book. I probably left two out because there's so many of them. But
He turns up in the 60s, too. You see him on Genie, on F Troop, on The Munsters.
That's right.
He had that short series where he was the Victorian detective.
That never aired.
Oh, it never aired.
He said it was his best. Of course, didn't air though. But you know, forgive me.
Yeah, he was on everything. You remember?
Yeah. Oh,
Dr. Dudley on The Munsters. Yeah, there was the Mountie on F Troop.
Yes. And
Henry Ford, the family. Right. Does anybody remember that?
He was on that. And a million variety shows.
Carol Burnett, everything, yeah.
Every Donnie and Marie, Carol Burnett, Mac Davis.
There was no way you were going to watch him in a drama.
That's what people don't. Yeah. But you know what Bill Asher said? He said Paul had enough depth that he could have done it. But nobody took him seriously.
He played a killer on something.
Cable Roberts?
Uh-huh.
Cable Roberts?
One show he played.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember.
Cable Roberts.
Yeah,
I think.
I'm trying to remember he did play a murderer.
Yeah, and he wanted to then pursue that. And Kay Ballard said, "Paul, what are you doing? People know you for your voice. They know you as funny. You can't be taking this seriously." But he was. But it didn't happen.
What is your opinion? And we had Valanche here, and he said, and we were talking about this before we turned the mics on, that Paul really could never succeed as a star, as a guy who was a star of his own vehicle, because he was too, I think Bruce said something to the effect that he was just too strong a spice. So you had to have a little bit of it and not a whole thing. And then Peter Marshall said something similar in your book.
Yes. It's like having chocolate mousse. You can only have a couple of tastes, otherwise it's too much.
You don't want it as a meal. Yeah. So he really was sort of too powerful. Like a Charles Nelson Reilly, he was too powerful for an audience to identify. He tried to play a father in the Paul Lynn show.
He tried to do a
domestic sitcom.
Yeah. That's what always got me is growing up, you could have guys like Paul Lynn or Charles Nelson Reilly with a wife and kids.
Yeah, nobody questioned it.
Yeah, people bought it. Yeah.
You said, he's eccentric.
Yeah, exactly what I thought he was. Okay, gotcha.
He's eccentric.
That's what, if someone was flamboyantly gay, they're eccentric. Or sometimes they would be evil. You know, you could have like a guy being effeminate, and then it was like an evil guy.
He would steal things that he was in. I mean, and by the way, he made such an impression as Uncle Arthur on Bewitched. Actually, only 11 episodes.
That's right, only 11. And people,
he only did 11 shows. And people think of him as being a fixture.
Yeah, as like he was in every one.
On that show. But you couldn't, you know, he stole a lot of the things that he was in.
He did.
You couldn't take your eyes off him.
No, he was and he didn't like to be with animals or children because he said, they'd steal the spotlight. So he loved the spotlight. I think if he had a really good writer and showed him maybe as a sad, broken person and then, you know, you could throw some comedy in. He might have had a shot, but no one wanted to put Paul in a serious role. That was the end of it.
They, well, then Bill Asher stereotype. put him in Temperatures Rising, but that wasn't his fault. Because that was already with Cleavon Little. You remember that show? It's a medical show.
Yes.
And they added Paul. I guess they added Paul when the show was already kind of flailing.
Yes, they did. They kept Cleavon Little. And Paul.
Yeah.
And
I can't remember.
And then,
James Whitmore.
Then you,
was
yeah,
on that
right.
Show.
Then that's when someone's thrown in, like, can you please save us?
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
He was brought on as a saver, but he couldn't save it.
No, he couldn't save it.
Yeah, I wonder if those Paul Lynn shows are available to go back and
Paul
watch
Lynn
them
show
now.
Is that available? On Antenna TV?
Is it on Antenna?
Yes.
What's it like to watch him now playing a dad in 2019?
Oh, my goodness.
In a domestic sitcom.
Well, Paul, on New Year's Eve last year, I had a commercial I was doing with my book during that marathon. I don't know if you guys know they did the marathon, Paul Lynn marathon.
I didn't see it, no.
Okay, it was on New Year's Eve. Oh. I had friends over.
Okay.
So I'm watching an episode, and then, you know, I figured, okay, they've seen enough. You know, they want to watch the ball drop. Do you know, these are all adults that, friends of mine, husbands, we want to watch the show. I said, you guys like this? I mean, I like it because I have a partial interest in the man.
Sure.
They all loved it. And, you know, I think the show's doing better now. It's actually, if you listen to it, I think Bruce Blanch might have helped some of those lines. But they're really beyond those years. And I think people weren't ready for it. Now it's entertaining enough.
Well, the Hollywood Squares, those jokes still hold up.
The bits
he was doing in the 70s are as funny as ever.
Oh, yes.
What did Paul Lynn ever talk about? I mean, I'm sure he did. Gay actors playing straight, gay, you know, closeted gay. What did he think?
He never brought that up. He just never brought that up. I mean, I've been out with him where we did he was doing a benefit. And in the middle of the benefit, a man came up and said, I want to interview you, Paul, and for the children's benefit. And Paul said, of course. And he was very happy to do it. Right in the middle of the interview, the guy says, so what do you think about Anita O'Brien? And me, all I knew was she was the orange juice lady.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea that she was having a campaign against gay people at that time. I had no idea. And so Paul looked at me and he said, let's get out of here.
He shut it down.
Exactly. Oh. And later on, we were at his house. I said, so naive, I'm sitting with all these people. So Paul's telling everybody about Anita O'Brien, the reporter. And I said very innocently, Paul, what does Anita Bryan have to do with you?
He wasn't comfortable talking about himself. He didn't do talk shows. He avoided talk shows because he didn't like talk. He didn't want to dive that deep.
He
didn't want to reveal.
He's too insecure.
Too insecure.
And he's afraid he wouldn't be funny.
Right.
And that's why he used to stay after shows and just autograph.
But what's interesting is if you watch the trajectory of Hollywood Squares and how the jokes become more and more revealing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
You know,
why do motorcyclists, motorcycle riders wear leather or whatever it is? And what does he say?
Chiffon wrinkles.
I mean, gradually, you had to be an idiot to not see that not only was he maybe struggling with it, but the writers were helping him.
Oh, they were, yeah. They were letting, you know what? He was out.
Come out.
In his own way. They would say, you know, Paul, what was one of the ones I love is in The Wizard of Oz, the lion wanted a heart. The lion wanted courage. The tin man wanted a heart. What did the scarecrow man want? And Paul said, he wanted the tin man to notice him. This is on TV.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, there were a lot of those.
It's funny when they talk about Paul Lynn. And they'll say, you know, they'd ask a question and he'd sneak in. And it's like, no, the questions were always have to do with being gay.
It was like double meaning,
but always.
Yeah, and you got it. And one day he was playing a narcissist on the nighttime Hollywood Squares. Yeah. And in the middle of him doing his questioning, they start playing I feel pretty and witty and gay. Paul's dying, he's looking at him like, I'll kill you guys. I mean, it was just so funny.
He put on a gown for Storybook Squares. He actually went in drag. Okay, we have to talk. It's a day before Halloween, so we have to talk about the infamous Paul Lynn Halloween special. We're throwing red meat to the listeners here.
This one runs neck and neck with Bob Hope with Joys.
Although Bob Hope with Joys is hard to watch.
Yes.
This one is just And
scary.
This is an entertaining train wreck.
Yes.
Because it's got,
I love it.
It's got Pinky Tuscadero.
Oh, yes,
it's
yes.
It's got Tim Conway as a
Tim
biker.
Conway.
Yeah, it's one
Paul
of those.
Paul a trucker.
Kiss shows yeah. up.
It's one of those, no, this isn't really happening.
Yeah. Now, Bruce told us he didn't really know who Kiss was.
No, he did not really know who he was. Do you know he didn't know who Elton John was either? And Elton
That's
John
right.
called him?
That's in the book.
Wow.
Elton
yeah.
John was
That's
a
so
fan
funny.
And he had no
but
idea.
But Kiss was great.
How is that
on
possible?
Halloween.
There's a great picture of him, Alice Cooper, and Elton
oh,
John.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
floating around
oh,
the web.
Yeah.
Somebody posted it on our Listener Society today. That Halloween special, Florence Henderson.
She's great.
Billy Barty.
Oh, isn't
turns
Margaret
up,
Hamilton?
Margaret
yeah.
Hamilton's in there.
Betty White does a little sneak
oh,
in.
It's really
there.
A great
God.
Cast.
It is a great cast. And the lines are funny. I think, he's saying, he has Betty White, there she is. She's like another witch. You know, he just does little dings to each person.
I think
person.
Billy Hayes shows
Billy
up
Hayes
as Witchy
is in
Poo.
There. That's right. She's great.
From Sid Marty. Yeah. Yeah, it's special.
They have a disco yeah. in the middle of the show. You have a disco dance. You got some variety skits. Tim Conway and Paul, and Paul Lynde's a trucker.
Yeah.
A trucker.
He's a trucker covered
big
in sequins.
Yeah.
That's
she was the rhinestone trucker, yes.
That special is when
it's
you
a
drop
special.
Bad acid.
It's great. You just watched it today on the way over here?
I watched it again on the way over here. I watched it a few weeks ago. I said, let me watch it again. I'm in the mood. It's Halloween.
I bought it on DVD.
Is it great?
I just had I had
it
to own
so
it.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go to YouTube. I had to have it in my house.
Yep.
It's so wonderfully bad and so wonderful at the same time. When was the last time you saw him?
1981, a few weeks, not too long before he passed.
He passed
away.
In January of 82.
Yeah, yeah. I went to see him in Canada and had a great time with him. Everything was good. He looked fine. He was a little tired. Someone had tried to sneak behind him with a weapon in their autograph book. Who knows if the guy was going to attack him or not.
That's
but it
a
was,
wild story.
Yeah, it was pretty stressful time. But he was fine. I had a great time. We went out to dinner. We had a great time. And then when I was leaving him, Paul was very superstitious, and he had a lot of anxiety and a lot of fears. He really, truly did. And, you know, as I was leaving him, I said, okay, goodbye, Paul. And he always said, never say goodbye.
I mean, that's a sweet thing in the book. He didn't like farewells.
He didn't like farewells with anybody, sincerely.
Or goodbyes,
yeah,
I should
yeah,
say.
Don't say goodbye. Just say, I'll see you soon.
Right.
So,
because he was haunted in a way by losing so many people early in life. He lost his brother. He lost his parents. He...
Yeah, he just hated goodbyes. And when I said that by accident, it's weird. I said goodbye, and that was the last time I physically saw him. But
it's sweet that you had a crush on this star.
Mm-hmm,
and we talk about on this show the danger of meeting your heroes.
Oh yeah.
But you know, like how disappointed I was when I first met Gilbert.
Oh
and that
God.
Endures that feeling to this day. But he was sweet. He accepted you. He wasn't threatened. He saw authenticity. He knew you were a fan. He knew you were just in his corner.
Yeah, I always feel very safe when I'm with you, Kathy. He always said that.
A friendship that went on for years.
Yeah, went on until he passed away. But it was a good time.
One of the other things in the book is this. I don't want to say he was carrying a torch for Marilyn, for his high school sweetheart, but it's almost as if, and we're speculating here, but it's almost as if that he saw an easier life, he saw an easier path being straight and being married.
Mm-hmm.
And
I spoke to her.
And kind of pined for that.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, I asked her, did you really like each other? I want to know. She said, oh yeah, very sincerely.
Yeah.
But she ended up sending him a wedding invitation when he was at college or something. He went, oh, she's getting married to somebody else. Okay, that was it.
He brought a lot of joy to a lot of people, you know. It's a shame so many demons and that he was done in by them at a fairly early age.
Yeah.
When
he could be generous and he could be troubled. And you know, that's with a lot of Hollywood people. Not you guys, though. You guys.
No, we're well adjusted.
I can see that.
It's a very sweet.
No, but I hate the Jews also.
Here we go.
It's a very, very sweet book. Paul Lynde, a biography, his life, his loves, and his laughter, with a foreword by our friend Peter Marshall.
Yes.
Peter Marshall, by the way, has got to be 95 years old and sounds 60.
He's unbelievable.
He sounds better than I do.
Unbelievable.
Same voice.
Oh, yeah. You can't miss that. Yep.
He was terrific.
He's still doing the big band on Channel 13. Yeah. Can you believe that?
That guy is just...
He's great.
Unsinkable.
Yeah.
Where can people get the book? On Amazon?
And Amazon.
It's got a lot of pictures.
I'm doing some eBay just for a very short time, limited personalized copies for anybody who's listening to the show or goes on eBay. You can find it there or my Facebook page.
Okay.
Paul Lynn, a biography, His Life, His Love, and His Laughter. It's a little long, but it's the title of the book.
Wonderful.
And I have it on there as well.
And that's by Kathy Fitzgibbon Rudolph. Paul Lynn, a biography, His Life, His Loves, and His Laughter.
The book is great. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Putting up with our silliness and our
You're
rudeness.
Fun. Paul would be laughing his head off.
Woody,
he really would.
That's
be. Yeah.
Sweet. We love hearing that. Thanks for schlepping in.
Well, thanks and for having us.
Thanks, Kath.
Oh, this has been Gilbert and Frank's amazing. I fucked it up.
It's all right. Do it as Paul.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. This has been Gilbert and Frank's amazing, colossal obsessions. Oh, I'm having an obsession right now.
Thank you, Kathy.
I love it. You guys are really a lot of fun.
Kids, I don't know what's wrong with these kids today. Kids, who can understand anything they say? Kids, they are disobedient, disrespectful oafs. Noisy, crazy, sloppy, lazy, loafers. While we're on the subject, kids, you can talk and talk to your faces blue. Kids, but they still do just what they want to do. Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today? Mind the midnight swim, it's the loop that hurts. Kids! How we ever beat the Russians? Kids! I didn't know what puberty was, so I almost passed it. Laugh and sing and dance and grin and morons. While we're on the subject, kids, they are just impossible to control. Kids, with their awful clothes and their rock and roll. Why can't they dance like we did? What's wrong with Sammy Kane? What's the matter with kids?